Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, this is episode 28 of the DesignFootball.com podcast. My name is Jay, I am the resident blogger on DesignFootball.com. And on this edition of the podcast, we are doing another club-specific episode. This is the third in a row, and this time it's St. Pauli. I'm joined by one half of the only English language St. Pauli podcast, Fell in Love with a Girl. One half of it, Sean is the half. Hi Sean, how are you?
I am great. How are you, Jay?
Yep, I'm good as well. Now, St. Pauli, for people who don't understand St. Pauli, don't necessarily know too much about German football, can you give us a quick overview? Obviously, we know the big teams like Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund and several Bayer Leverkusen and various others. Who are St. Pauli?
So, St. Pauli are a second division Bundesliga team. They were formed in 1910. Their history kind of trucks along without a whole lot of glory, a very empty trophy cabinet. Through much of their history up until the 80s. And what happened is their club culture changed rather drastically as supporters from Hamburg or SV kind of got tired of the right-wing and Nazi-adjacent supporters and some of that political tension that existed on the ground, and they found another club and they started attending St. Pauli matches. And St. Pauli, their stadium, the Millerntor, I've been talking with another podcast and their name is Millerntor, which confuses the heck out of me. So their stadium, Millerntor Stadion, is in the St. Pauli district of Hamburg, which contains the Reeperbahn, which is the red light district, and a lot of music clubs and bars. So it's this very vibrant lifestyle that surrounds the club. And as this punk influence grew within the club, attendance started to swell and people realized that there was something very, very special happening. There were disputes between squatters and the police during the 80s, which kind of served as a rallying cry to not only the club, but sort of the special and weird elements of the St. Pauli district. And so that started to be embraced by the club itself, and it's grown and grown and grown to the point where there's now an English language site which launched earlier in the year. There's now a US-based club shop. So it's really started to swell, but it really holds on to a lot of the left-wing roots, okay, which really caused the popularity of the club to grow.
Okay. So we're saying that they're sort of left-wing, socialist, liberal-minded as well. That would tie into it. Is that right?
Absolutely. So there's the philosophy of no racism, no sexism, no homophobia, no fascism, and never, ever again, the third division. So yeah, it's a very tolerant club, a very embracing club, as long as you hold those values to be true and dear, then I think everyone's welcome at Sankt Pauli.
Hmm. Okay, so as this being a kit podcast, the new kits have recently been launched.
Yes,
so
they have.
The profile isn't necessarily huge, but there's a sense of an impact that you get from Sankt Pauli that you probably wouldn't get with other clubs of the same level in leagues around Europe. So there is a bigger profile to the kit release as a result of that, because of the appeal that they have internationally as well, isn't it? Obviously, you're speaking from Canada. And there's supports groups in the UK, I believe, as well, isn't there?
There's a few in the UK. There's Yorkshire Sankt Pauli, which is probably one of the oldest. Well, I think it is the oldest English-based supporters club. There's also a supporters club in Glasgow. There's supporters clubs in Brazil, Greece, the United States, in New York specifically. There's a supporters club in Toronto, Canada, which is not right next door to Calgary, but there is another club in Canada, and they enjoy a very widespread supporters base around the world.
Okay, so you've just had the kit release, kit. So all three kits have been released. Take us through them. Start with a home shirt and kit. What's that like? Describe it for us.
So the brand new home kit is brown shorts with a brown shirt. Across the torso of the new home shirt are what look like paint stripes, complete with drips and kind of rough edges of white, red, and white bands. One on top of each other, covering probably just above the armpit to just above the navel, so quite broad stripes. And our shirt sponsor, Kongstar, across the middle, of course. Under Armour is our technical partner. I think is that the correct way of describing your shirt maker these days?
Technical partner, that sounds right, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
It depends on the club, I think. It depends on which PR team is in control of that kind of wording. But yeah, I think
for a consistent nomenclature, I'll say technical partner.
Technical partner, that's depressing. Yeah. So, what's the sponsor, Kongstar? What is Kongstar?
I believe they're a mobile provider.
Okay.
They aren't in Canada, so I believe that's what they do.
Okay, all right. So how has the home kit gone down then? Because I've seen it, and it's another example where it's a nice idea, but maybe hasn't been executed as well as it could have been.
All three Under Armour, all three kits have not gone over terribly well. I think part of it is, I think there's a general feeling that Under Armour doesn't necessarily fit the club culture. After the U.S. election, the president and CEO of Under Armour made some pro-Trump comments, which obviously went over like a lead balloon with the supporters base, saying he was good for business in the United States. And there has been a lot of dissatisfaction with Kevin Plank, the founder and CEO of Under Armour, for his comments. Now, that was immediately followed by athletes from the Under Armour brand, like Steph Curry, The Rock, who came out immediately and said, Kevin Plank does not speak for me. Mm. And I think it's dangerous to view an entire company as a monoculture, because clearly the CEO does not reflect the values of every person who works for the company. Mm. But generally speaking, I think people aren't terribly happy that Under Armour is our kit provider. And some of their design choices this year are not necessarily reflective of some of those values, and that'll be more the third kit, but I won't go too crazy.
Myself. The away kit shares a lot of traits with the home kit. Is that right? So it's in slightly different colors. To obviously, it needs to be a change kit.
Yeah, so through the torso, it's paired with white shorts. It's a white torso with a gray brick pattern in it. And then across the yoke of the shirt, there are red and brown stripes. And again, kind of embracing that graffiti aesthetic. There are some drips in the quote-unquote paint that kind of dribble down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I see what they were trying to do there, but the brick pattern through the torso is very busy, especially when you look at it up close.
It strikes me as this whole idea of like the shoddily done paintwork and maybe slash graffiti over the brickwork and the old looking wall, and it just sounds like people who are used to sort of a polished style of doing everything, I suppose, having an idea of what sort of punk is and what I don't know what the working class are. Maybe I don't know. It seems like it's a bad imitation of punk culture.
A caricature, kind of.
Yeah. That's the impression I got from it. I mean, it's interesting that I ask you the question, what do you think of the new kits? And I hear about the ethical element of Under Armour. So I mean, it's great to hear it, and it was something I was going to come on to anyway. But purely aesthetically, if you just look at the shirt, if you try kind of put anything political to one side for a second... Would the shirts appeal? Let's say they didn't have a badge on them. They didn't have a manufacturer's logo on them at all. Would they appeal in that way?
You know, it's funny that you should say that. I think the badge is really what hurts the whole thing. Mm. And in this case, I mean the manufacturer's badge.
Yeah.
I think if it was almost any other manufacturer, these would be readily embraced shirts. Now, I don't speak for the entire supporter base of St. Pauli. It's just impossible. There's too many of us. We're too diverse. And we all have strongly held opinions. Personally, I am something of an apologist for this set of kits. I see what they tried to do. And if the message wasn't coming from Under Armour, I think we would be much more receptive to the message. As someone said in conversation with me a little while ago, when you get bad news from a friend, it's fine. If it comes from a stranger, it's taken. It has more of an impact. It's not as soft a blow, shall we say. I think the third kit kind of perfectly encompasses what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Because I think that will really bring it into sharp focus.
Well, what I look at these kits, and it's a little bit like when you read an interview of a rock band, say, and they seem like idiots, and then you hear one of their songs and it sounded like a great song, and you think, actually, that's a fluke. You've released that great song not because you're great, but because you've just stumbled upon something. But then you read an interview with a band that seem great, and everything they stand for seems fantastic, and they release a terrible song, and you listen and you go, well, that's so disappointing. And you would apologize, or maybe you would look for that in that song for redeeming qualities. But when you see these kits are made by Under Armour, and obviously there's a political issue there, you're not as willing to give them the benefit of the doubt over what they've created. You look at it and say, well, maybe it's cynical. And the third shirt is the prime example of that, I think, isn't it? Describe that one for us.
So the third shirt, which will probably not see a whole lot of traction, as they're typically worn for Deutsche Pokal. It's a three-tone gray camouflage kit. It's visually very... There's a lot going on there. There's a camouflage pattern. There's the drippy paint aspects of the previous two kits. Plus there's the St. Pauli Totenkopf that's also worked into the pattern as well in some of the same tones. So you'll catch a blob of the camouflage, and then there's kind of a little bit of a Totenkopf sticking out of it.
Could you just tell us what that is?
The Totenkopf is it's the skull and crossbones logo that you see associated with St. Pauli. In the 80s, one of the supporters, it's a very famous story, Doc Mabuse, who's a punk musician, grabbed a pirate flag from a stall on his way to the game, attached it to a broomstick, started flying it at the stands, and it kind of caught on. Hamburg being a port city, there's the allusion to history of piracy, and so that was embraced by the club and turned into a second badge, kind of sort of. It rarely appears associated with the shirts, but everyone I think has seen the St. Pauli t-shirts, the black t-shirts with the white Totenkopf, or hoodies. Are probably the two biggest items that you'd see those on, and of course flags. So it's ironic that this symbol that was strictly a supporter based symbol has been taken and trademarked by the club and then repackaged and sold back to the supporters. There's definitely a circle of life involved there.
That's an interesting point, isn't it? It's
unique in that there's not a whole lot of clubs that have a secondary symbol that's
not
as strongly recognized by the supporters as the club badge, or even an outside observer. You see a skull and crossbones, you think St. Pauli. If you see the club badge, you also think St. Pauli. It's just that Totenkopf is it has a very strong level of recognition.
Yeah. Does it strike you that the incorporating of that symbol into a camouflage shirt, the camouflage thing has been done for the past four or five seasons.
It's a very strong element this year. It seems like Nike and Adidas have both got some of their templates have some strong camouflage elements. So I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
No. And the Nike third kits, and these, I was talking about these the other day, and they're Nike third kits for clubs. Really, for the past few seasons, have been a Nike release first and foremost, rather than a release for the club. It's just a colorway of one design, and it's distributed to the clubs poorly, as it turns out. in a lot of cases. And yeah, this season's, or the new seasons from Nike, is has a sort of angular camouflage effect, like a very modern approach to camouflage, kind of like a 3D isometric thing, but combined with camouflage. But how do you feel about that? That's like almost a trope, I suppose, of this camouflage design being used for your club. Is that is that something you get on board with, or does it have connotations for the supporter base? Is camouflage something you'd see in the stands from the fans? It's not. Okay.
Absolutely not. So the camouflage aspect of the kit has not gone over well. There has been a lot of dissent amongst the supporters in terms of wearing camouflage, which has obviously a military and to a degree kind of the hunting fraternity aspect to it, which don't jibe terribly well with the Saint Pauli values.
No.
Pacifism is definitely a value held by Saint Pauli supporters, and the camouflage has not gone over well. Now that being said, ironically enough, there are a few kits in the past that the club have worn that have incorporated camouflage, but because it's coming from Under Armour, and because the state of politics are so heightened right now, I think if it came from another brand, it wouldn't be so bad. But because it's Under Armour, there's a strong feeling of rejection towards the third kit, especially, which is ironic, because to go back to how things are shaping up for this year's kit releases. Happy Christmas, by the way, because of course this is the most wonderful time of the year, because we're starting to see actual kits come out, and it's not just concepts and leaks and concepts. We actually get our stuff. It's awesome. And there's still a few surprises under the tree. But a theme that has been strong this year in the releases are not just there are camouflage elements, but there's also homage elements. There's also throwback elements that are strong this year. And I'm struggling to remember a couple, but Liverpool doing the callback to the 96 kit, which had the bottle green and white quarters. Bayern Munich shirts this year, the home and away, one harkens back to the 90s, one harkens back to the 70s and 80s. So I think what the designers at Under Armour were trying to do was pull back into the club's past a little bit and bring that camouflage element forward. And I think it just wasn't received terribly well because of who the messenger was in this case.
So you mentioned the history there, and the thing that jumps out to me when you describe the kits is the brown. Now, is the brown a constant since day one? Because there's not many teams that wear brown. There's the old thing about Coventry City wearing a brown away kit in the 70s, 80s.
Yeah. Vancouver Whitecaps had an alternate kit that was brown. Not terribly well received. Brown is a hard color to pull off, but it's brown and white have been the traditional colors of St. Pauli since time immemorial, I think. And so there is that tradition of brown and white.
But that varies, doesn't it? Because I looked through the history of the kits, and
there's not a whole lot of brown and white in recent history.
No, it seems to change quite regularly. There's hoops, there's stripes as well. Then there's a plainer shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not a loss of identity there?
I think it's an evolution of identity. I don't think there's going to be a time where Saint Pauli don't wear brown and white. It's just, I don't think that'll ever change how you represent brown and white, especially since you have those two colors so strongly associated with the club. To pull that away, there's never been a strong third color or an accent color. Red is used quite often as an accent color, but brown and white is the identity of the club. Hamburg is brown vice. That has always been the way. I think that is always how it shall be. There has been a change in kit philosophy over the last few years, where we're seeing different things like gradients and racing stripes and solid colored shirts as opposed to brown and white stripes. But I think that's only because you can only do so much with stripes until you have to change something up. So I think we're just in a period where solid colors are a little more popular for the time being. But I think it's only a matter of time before we will see brown and white stripes on Saint Pauli.
So this is the second season of Under Armour, is that correct?
It is. So last year they wore basically a recycled Tottenham Hotspur template as their home kit, which was an all-brown torso and sleeves with kind of that squared-off Mandarin collar in red, white, and red striped, which I wasn't a fan of, and was even less pleased with once I realized it was just Tottenham's hand-me-downs.
Yeah, that can work sometimes. One of the change kits, I think it might have been the third kit, was black, I think, and had like a sublimated big skull as the main image. Is that right?
So that is one of the few appearances of the Tottenkopf in the kit itself. So the center panel of the shirt had a very sublimated, very, very, very subtle Tottenkopf pattern. In most of the shop photos, it tends to show the pattern a little more, but in person, it's actually quite subtle.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Because we had on our website, we had a competition a few years ago when Hummel took over the contract. So Hummel had the contract prior to Under Armour. We had a competition to design a kit for St. Pauli, and some of the entrants were fantastic. Some of the entries, sorry, were fantastic, and that was one of the designs we used actually. So it was interesting to see it being brought to life. So that was Under Armour. Hummel has a longer history with St. Pauli. They used to produce a lot of the merch, I think, despite not making the kits. And then they did get the kit contract for a couple of seasons. They had it. Were those kits a bit more popular?
They are certainly. To my mind, anyways, I think they're the apex of the kits, personally. In fact, the 15-16 kits incorporated a rainbow band around the bottom of each sleeve.
Yeah,
and the Tottenkopf just inside the collar was in rainbow color as well, which. Mm. Just shows how far they're going to go to express their solidarity and embrace that diversity.
You have the rainbow flag flying at the stadium, is that correct?
Yeah, it's heartening to see rainbow flags flying at more and more stadiums, actually. In the MLS, I know it can regularly be seen in the stands of all the Cascadia teams, so Vancouver, Seattle, and, of course, the Portland Timbers. It's something that's growing, and I hope to see more of in more stadiums across the world.
Yeah, so Hummel obviously incorporated that into the kit. I remember the kit, and I think my feelings on it was then the kit became a little bit overdone because it had a gradient pattern in sort of a zigzag approach in white and brown, I think. And I think with the cuffs in the rainbow colours, it was a bit too much. So maybe it would have worked better with a plain shirt. But that's when the aesthetics become... Maybe I missed the point somewhat by getting a little bit too obsessed with the aesthetics of it. So it is an important point, especially with the way football is behind the times in essentially not having any out footballers at all. So to have that as a contrast is something subversive, which St. Pauli would always be. Hummel came in, they released a couple of seasons worth of kits. What other manufacturers have you had? Do You Football, is that right?
Do You Football has been a big part of the recent kit history going back, I want to say, back to about 2005. I believe they're gone now. I could be wrong, but I've found zero web presence for them in recent years. So I don't know if the 13-14 kit was the end of Do You Football, but I can't find them anywhere. Hummel was the technical partner for two seasons. 14-15 and 15-16. Both kits were designed by your former guest Jason Lee. I'm looking forward to having on our podcast because he's a St. Pauli supporter, and I think his aesthetic matches up really well with St. Pauli. He has a very playful style. He's not afraid to get completely bonkers. And that works really, really well with St. Pauli's aesthetic.
And, yeah.
He came out with some cracking kits. Like I said, his kits are my favorite of all time with Pauli.
Yeah,
the gradient kit actually lives on. I just saw a photo on Twitter the other day of Bohemians wearing a Hummel team kit, and I think it was black and white, but it was that same gradient diamond pattern shirt.
Oh, really? I hadn't seen
Hummel
that.
Must have incorporated it into their team wear range. I commented on Twitter, that shirt looks awfully familiar.
Jason, if you follow Jason on Instagram, you'll see to what extent he likes graphic patterns and that kind of thing, and he will take it to an extensive degree. He's very much into that late 80s, early 90s approach. So he will post a lot of things like that, and obviously it brings him success in his designing as well. A freelance designer that we had, I can't remember which episode, but we had him on, but one of the early episodes, I think, of this podcast. Yeah, and he's a great guy as well.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so when it comes to these manufacturers, we've gone through the history of the club and what it stands for today. How does that marriage work between, certainly Under Armour as an example of it, it's a commercial entity. How important are the ethics for each manufacturer when they enter into an agreement, or is that bypassed completely because kind of you've both got a job to do, which is to sell kits?
Yeah. I know for a fact that the club vets their technical partners in terms of the working conditions of the people actually manufacturing the garments, as well as how the fabric is sourced and where it's sourced from. So that is something that the club looks into and is part of the decision-making process. If we're wearing Under Armour, I presume that means they've passed that particular litmus test. I think the biggest issue is with the founder and CEO's politics, and probably very poorly chosen words.
That kind of is secondary, though. So if the club has actually gone to the lengths of checking what the business practices are and how the company's treating the world in general, despite being a commercial entity, and they've found that, yeah, that's okay, we can deal with this company, a personal opinion from the CEO is not really as important, is it? I understand that it's going to make fans angry, but you can't really ask more of the club than what the club has done there, can you?
I'm very proud of the club that I support because they take an interest in the ethics behind the manufacturing of the kit. I know that in the past there have been controversies about kids stitching footballs specifically under horrendous conditions for very little to no money for their labor. So by making sure that Under Armour is producing their shirts in an ethical fashion is important, and it's important to me to know that Under Armour, whether it's voluntarily or whether it's to appease one second division German club, which I'm sure isn't the case, it does matter both to the club and to the supporters. But of course, when Kevin Plank shoots his mouth off, that makes headlines, whereas we have a factory that stitches together bits of polyester under ethical conditions does not make headlines. So it is a dichotomy, but one that I think the headlines tend to overbalance. The other thing is you have to bear in mind that Under Armour backed up a small truck of money and said, here you go. At the end of the day, we can take bad money if you want to look at it that way and do good things with it. In fact, the launching of the Under Armour kit deal, coincidentally or not, launched at around the same time as the club's music school for youth. So whether or not that all plays together or not, you have good money to do good things with, which can be community outreach, which can be charitable donations, expanding the number of players, because St. Pauli is a sports club rather than a football club. You can take some of that money and put that towards other programs.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, that I obviously go onto the club shop website of various football teams and look at the ranges, and St. Pauli's ranges are fantastic. Of all the different merch they sell, the key rings and the hats, the beanies and jackets and track pants and all this kind of stuff, and they seem to do it really well, and they've also produced these beautiful like glossy catalogues of all their ranges each season. I don't know if they still do. I imagine they still do. It seems so polished. They seem to be a commercial entity to such a great extent that you wouldn't necessarily expect it. And that's maybe a prejudice, that you wouldn't necessarily expect someone who have these ideals, these left-wing and liberal ideals, to be able to do selling shit so well. But the way you describe it, I suppose it isn't a conflict there, is it?
It is and it isn't. I mean, some of the knick-knacky sort of kitschy stuff, I think there's a lot of that. And if you can put a Totenkopf onto it, then I think St. Pauli as an organization will always take the temptation to put a Totenkopf on it and sell it for a few euro. But they have a very strong identity, and they do a very good job of catching people's attention with that identity. I keep wanting to say brand, which seems antithetical to what we're talking about here, but they do have a very strong brand, for lack of a better word. But we'll stick with identity. And if you walk up and down the street and you see someone wearing a black t-shirt with the Totenkopf, that grabs a lot of attention, and that spreads, or rather that gives the launching off point into a conversation about, well, what is this? Oh, why is it a skull and crossbones? Why? How did this all? Oh, it's a German football team. Okay, weird. What are they all about? Oh, it's inclusive. Oh, it's very punk rock. Okay, cool. And then you grab people and pull them into the supporter base.
See, this is, we mentioned that the kit releases are higher profile than you'd necessarily have for other teams of that level, on-field level. Is there an extra responsibility, do you think, or should it be read that there's an extra responsibility in providing St. Pauli with a kit? In effect, not everyone's politics are the same, but in effect, you're kitting out the good guys. You're kitting out the people who are fighting the good fight. So trying to make the world a better place, that's the idea behind it. Certainly I would be sympathetic to that idea. So does the responsibility go beyond the supporter base, in that you are trying to appeal to the world, in effect, to the more people that get on board with these ideals, the more people will be educated in how we treat the planet a little bit better and our fellow humans a little bit better. I mean, the other day, there was the whether you agree with it or not, there were the protests in Hamburg over the G20. I take it a lot of those people protested would have been St. Pauli fans rather than, say, Hamburg fans.
Yeah, St. Pauli has been very involved in the anti-G20 protests and demonstrations and public statements. You saw FCK G20 in the Run DMC style logo stickers pop up very shortly after the announcement was made that G20 was coming to Hamburg. Personally, I think the organizers of G20 could not have picked a worse place to hold their meetings, because Hamburg is so charged, and especially the district of St. Pauli, that I don't think they really knew what they were getting themselves into. The club has been very much directly putting themselves in a position of being the voice against the G20, insofar as last season our manager, who has now taken more of a front office role as the technical director and a relationship managing position within the club, Ewald Lienen, made a very public statement on behalf of the club about G20 and the state of affairs around Hamburg, which, if you've seen any of the photos, the police use of force has been atrocious, at least by North American standards. I don't know if that's necessarily how things are typically done by the German police.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the images of it, and I also see the images as they are translated or edited by mainstream media. So, yeah, it still looks bad, even when you take that into consideration. So, it's that there are always going to be different viewpoints on who is causing the trouble and who's not, and to what extent that trouble should be stamped out, sometimes in literal terms. So that's a separate issue. But when you consider that these are people who are taking to heart the world's problems in such a way which goes far beyond the general man in the street, and certainly beyond what football does, the force for good that football is globally, and a lot of people would be of the opinion that football is a force for bad now, when you consider the TV deals and so on, and who's involved with the TV deals in, for example, the UK. When you are creating a kit for this team, all of these things should be taken into consideration, and maybe there should be a company that's fighting the good fight themselves.
I don't disagree. Under Armour, I think, is a name that represents larger business. One of the major players in terms of sportswear. And it's ironic that a brand like that has paid attention to St. Pauli, a club with literally zero trophies in its cabinets. Now, whether or not the company being American playing part in that, I think is not it's not immaterial. So we are seeing the partnering of a very large company with a very small, relatively speaking, club. So I think that it exists in tension. But of course, this is a club that has always existed in a certain state of tension with itself, insofar as football being a business and supporters who want to see less business involved in football. The politics are fairly homogenous, but like I said, I always hesitate to depict any group of people in a monoculture. Even so far as the Sud Curve existing in tension with the Gegenrot, the two major stands, the ultras in the Sud Curve aren't always making the decisions that reflect the voices of people in the Gegenrot or the Nordkurve or the rest of the stadium. So there's always that element of tension. And I think as the club grows, that tension continues to exert itself.
Okay. All right. So going back, maybe incorporating this as well, what would you like to see from the St. Pauli kit? And you can maybe pick a manufacturer as well if you like. And I don't know if there is any that would really be entirely true to the ideals of what the club stands for culturally. But what design would you like to see? What would you like it to give off?
You know, I talked earlier about tradition and brown and white stripes being kind of the traditional design. I would love to see brown and white hoops, or even brown and black hoops. I like hoops personally. I don't know about you. I'm very particular about colors. I like flappy polo shirt style colors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something dark and rich and wide like that would be my perfect kit.
Yeah,
and then you can change it up easily by having, say, like an away kit that's white, and that way you can interchange the socks and the shorts nicely, so that you don't have to necessarily have dedicated change items. You can just swap it out, which I'm not sure if that works for the club's bottom lines, because if you can sell change items, then that's more euros in the till and going towards other parts of the club.
That could be the conflict there. You might have summed up the conflict of whether you have change items or not, because if you have the change items, you're fleecing the fans. If you are providing multi-purpose items that can be worn with various shirts and everything's interchangeable, then you're providing true value to the fans. So maybe that's something to check on, whether each season, whether they go, which route they go down, because that it's something I've written about before, because you can even increase sales that way, because if something can be worn with more than one shirt, then surely it's a better purchase. But that is the gulf between, perhaps the gulf between the commercial thinker and the ethical thinker, and it might be one case where the ethical thinker actually thinks outside the box and maybe is more has better commercial aptitude, ironically. That might be the key to it, but probably
well
not.
You look at, say, a massive club like Manchester United, three or even four kits, mostly with dedicated change items. Are you giving the supporters of the club more variety to choose from, or are you just being more cynical and looking at the bottom line and saying, well, you know, if we put out black socks and black shorts for change items, then we can get another couple of £100,000 or what have you, or millions of pounds, I'm sure, would be the economy of scale in this case with the example of Manchester United. Who knows? I think even having a third kit hasn't always been embraced by supporters of the club, to the best of my knowledge, simply because they are typically worn for the DFB Cup, and that's about it. It might make a regular season appearance, but it's generally a commercial venture more than anything else, mostly because we typically don't do terribly well in the Cup. So we see very few appearances. But personally, I like third kits only because it's your chance to do something a little weird and wonderful. Going back to Jason Lee with his, I think it was the 14-15 third shirt, which kind of broke with tradition. It's got black raglan sleeves, but through the body it kind of looks black, which is becoming the traditional color of our third kits. But if you look at the shadow pattern, which are a bunch of stars with a pattern behind it, it's actually brown and black when you get up close and look at it with kind of these sky blue details on it. And in fact, Jason incorporated a very playful through line through all three of the shirts. There's glow-in-the-dark elements on each. So on the third kit,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
the glow-in-the-dark badge. On the inside of the away shirt, there's a little skull motif next to your heart. And on the back side of the collar on the home kit that year, there's a pattern of stars across the underside of the collar with the Totenkopf in the middle, and they all glow in the dark as well. I like that the third kits are this palette on which you can... Mm. go a little bonkers, and I really tend to like some shirts that are off the beaten path a little bit.
Yeah, that again is that notion of providing value to people. So if you are going to release a third shirt, make sure it's distinctive, make sure it's something extra that's being given specific to that club, and then maybe people will embrace it more. This has been really great speaking to you, Sean. Really enjoyed it. I think we are both, I mean, your politics are I think probably more steadfast than mine, but there certainly is a conflict for the kit geek in seeking out what's right in the world, but also really liking these polyester creations by often horrible companies.
It's true. I mean, kits have always been, since I started watching football after the 94 World Cup, kits were really kind of the embodiment of what was different about football. And as I grew to love the sport, the shirts sometimes leave me cold in terms of designs. But there's something wonderful about... especially this time of year where you start seeing stuff come out, to use the Christmas analogy one more time. And you get these little surprises and you start to see leaks and then the actual kit and how does that compare? It's a wonderful thing. And as cynical and commercial as football kits can be, and I think become increasingly cynical, we're now looking at a lot of clubs, my own included, where we're seeing 1 year kit cycles only because that's the best way to get more money into the till.
Yeah.
I like the variety of not being stuck with the same shirt year on year, like for example a 2 year kit cycle. If I had to look at that Under Armour shirt with the red collar, the Tottenham hand-me-downs one more season, I'd probably be pulling my hair out right now.
That's a Freudian slip right there.
It really is. So there's upsides and downsides to the one-year kit cycle. The upside is, you know, as football supporters, we all have the choice of whether or not we have to have the most current shirts. And I think we've seen that market reach a crescendo. And I think supporters will soon embrace the idea that maybe we don't all have to have the most current shirt, and maybe we'll just wait for a design that speaks to us before we run out to the shops with cash in hand.
Yeah, it's right that they've created the pressure for themselves by my move into this 1 year cycle, but it's good that they are now as a result under pressure to create something special or vary the designs, so sometimes you get some of the fans and the next season maybe you get some of the others. So again, it's a a good thing for the consumer that they have that variety, but the end goal is always it's always commercial. But as you say, if it's good or bad money, it makes not too much difference if you're going to do good things with it, which St. Pauli do a lot of good. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Good luck with the podcast. How do we get hold of the podcast? Where is it? It's on iTunes or what do they call it now? It's now Apple Podcasts or something, isn't it? Where else can we get you?
We're on Twitter. I ironically didn't use Twitter until we started up the podcast, and Samantha gives me stick at every opportunity to and reminds me that I didn't like Twitter or didn't like the idea of Twitter until I started using Twitter, and now I'm slightly addicted. So on Twitter, we're at With a Girl Pod. You can also email us, fellinlovewithagirlpodcast@gmail.com. The email address so long you need to stop and take a nap in between and then carry on. Or if you want to look for us through your favorite podcast app, I believe the best way of finding us is searching Fell in Love with a Girl, all one word, and we should pop up. But we always post our most current episode pinned to the top of our Twitter feed.
Ah, okay. Well, that's ideal. So I listen every week. It's more or less every week, isn't it? It's for every match day, really, isn't it?
We do one every match day. In the Bundesliga, there is the English week, which is a very match-dense week. Usually two or three fixtures, and this year we tried to do one for every match during that week, which was three, and we will not be doing that again. It was a little crazy, but we publish after every match day. Sometimes there's a little bit of a lag between the time the podcast is produced and the time the podcast is published. We're already fighting against an 8-hour time delay, so we're working from under the gun. And then I have a bad case of audio editing induced narcolepsy. So by the time I'm editing the pod, it's usually around midnight or so. Sometimes I can push through till 1 or 2 in the morning, but usually I fall asleep and plant my face right on my iPad.
I feel your pain. But we do this for the love of it. We shouldn't forget that. So
this is absolutely a labor of love. Every episode we do a non-commercial, which is just a shout out to something we like and accept no money for. Every episode costs us money, and we don't care. We love doing it. I love sitting down with my girlfriend every week and watching football and talking about it. So really, it's as much for us as it is for the listeners.
I think first and foremost, if you're pleasing yourself, then you're on to a winner. If you want to check us out, we are designfootball.com. We are designfootball.com on Facebook, and designfootball on Twitter. I'm J29ers if you want to speak to me directly. Thanks again, Sean. Thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I will continue to listen to all of your podcasts. I hope you've enjoyed speaking to me about St. Pauli kits, and all the best for the new season. I'm not sure if I want you to get promoted, though. That's the difficult thing. I think you might be exactly... I can focus on the politics where you are. As soon as you make it into the Bundesliga again, and it's Bundesliga 1, then... it's a bit like either things go very badly as they did last time, I think you got relegated straight away, or you start to do well and then you become part of that horrible machine. And I don't think I want you there. Is that cruel?
No, not at all. I think second Bundesliga is the sweet spot for us. We had a narrow escape from being relegated to the third division, which would have been disastrous both financially for the club, for the supporters, especially supporters like us from abroad, where they're not in the news and the headlines, and they're not as accessible through larger media outlets, but still remaining in the second Bundesliga, still remaining accessible and able to kind of spread that set of values and be enough in people's faces without having to concern ourselves with the issues that big clubs have to face, which is competing against Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. And inevitably, I mean, how do you win that battle? So I think to go back to the tension, I think our position in the world is perfect right where it is right now. And this has been an absolute pleasure, being able to vent my kit nerdery with you, because you're very passionate and very knowledgeable, and this has been a distinct pleasure. I hope we get to do this again next year.
Yeah, it'll be great to speak to you again soon. We'll find other things to talk about, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
So, kit related or not. So yeah, brilliant having you on, Sean, and I'll speak to you soon. And soon we'll have another podcast with another guest, so stay tuned for that. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye now.
Goodbye, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.